At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Oh, man, it's 6 p.m., and that means it's time for the Bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome in to the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. BMAC behind the glass on Twitter at Sacked by BMAC. We're here with you till 7 o'clock. We'll have Wagering World with Five Star in Vegas after that. And then Patrick Creighton will return. He's been gone for a while. PC will be back with late hits tonight at 8 o'clock. Speaking of PC, real quick note here, starting Sunday night after the Astros game, Patrick will be doing a Astros post-game show on the station. The only time he won't will be Monday night because we'll have a Dallas Cowboys game that will be airing. But every other night, Patrick will be doing Astros post-game shows throughout the rest of the playoffs, hopefully through a World Series championship. I am going to be doing de facto pre-game shows, apparently, from 6 to 6:30 most days next week. But we're here with you till 7. We got plenty of talk about. Of course, the Astros get ready to take on the Rangers this weekend. The Texans taking on the New Orleans Saints. We'll do what you will learn this weekend in college football and the NFL. But we'll start with the Astros and the Rangers. And you guys are welcome in all show long. 713-780-3776 into the text line. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Look, it's funny to see what's happened, I think, with the Astros the last couple days since they've achieved this run. I saw this clip on Twitter today that blew my mind. If I went on the radio today and I told everyone that Jose Altuve has already passed Derek Jeter as an all-time player and that the Astros' current run is better than the Yankees' run of the late 90s and early 2000s, I think a lot of you would try to put me on Bad Take Boulevard. That's what's happening in New York right now, and that's where the Astros are. The Astros dynasty, what they've created, is so special, and it's so different than I think what any other team has done. Yes, they only have 2 World Series championships so far, but when you look at most of these like big dynasty runs, the Yankees is really the best example. They got 3 titles. The Astros have 2 right now. A Yankees fan, in my opinion, should not be able to argue 2017 against the Astros because all those Yankees teams are littered with cheaters. They're all littered with steroid users. So, like, to me, there's absolutely no difference. But the reason why I think the Astros run and what they'll start on Sunday, 7 straight ALCS appearances, winning the division 6 out of 7 times, 2 World Series championships. What's so different, I think, about the Astros and what they're starting and continuing to do throughout this run is who the team is and who the organization is. And that's what sets them apart. The Yankees, the Braves, like when they had these runs that were incredible, they all had 1 manager, 1 GM. The Astros are going to their 7th straight ALCS title or a series with their 3rd different general manager. They're doing it with their 2nd manager. And you go back to 2017, and I apologize to Lance McCullers, but the only people that are left from 2017 are Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, and Justin Verlander. Your bullpen and almost every single position and your entire rotation besides JV has completely turned over since you won your first championship in 2017. And that's why I think that the Astros stand so far ahead of what other teams have done, at least in recent memory. If you win another World Series championship this year, even just getting to another World Series, it puts you on a level that I think goes far above the rest. And part of that also goes into the fact that everyone is just relentlessly complaining about the playoff format, that like all these 100 lost teams and division winners got knocked out of the playoffs. And ever since they changed the format, it just like it hasn't been good for baseball. And the Astros keep trucking along, like no problems here. It doesn't matter if they win 100 games and they have the one seed, they win 90 games and they have the two seed. The Astros just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. I think it shows that like there's not a problem in baseball with the playoffs. Like, I don't think you can just say the Astros are the exception to the rule. Yes, they are better than everyone else, but like you don't need to do some widespread playoff changes because the Astros are clear proof that it does not matter if you take 5 or 6 days off, even a week off. Like, the best teams are going to win. The Atlanta Braves are missing multiple players from their rotation, guys coming back from injury, and the Dodgers, their most expensive players, they just sucked. Like, the Astros' best players have shown up when they needed to, and even their players who struggled during the regular season, like Christian Javier, like Jose Urquidy, have shown up big time already in the postseason.
I mean, Clayton Kershaw has sucked going back for like 3 different playoff formats. So it doesn't matter what playoff format you throw the Dodgers into, whether it be a 1-game wild card series, a 3-game wild card series, or just having the 4 teams in. Clayton Kershaw's been a playoff disaster outside of like 1 start his entire career. So it doesn't really matter. And specifically with the Braves, I mean, the Braves, obviously their offense has been great, but I think a lot of their hopes this year pinned upon the success of Spencer Strider. And look, he's putting up amazing strikeout numbers. But you look at everything else, especially the ERA, it's been a down year for him. And if your ace is not having the season that you need, it doesn't really matter what else happens around him in the postseason. It's a short series. If your ace struggles, the other pitchers are probably going to follow suit. The Phillies have a great offense, a tough ballpark to play at, unless you're the Astros, who went 2-1 last year in the World Series there. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to explain why the Braves and the Dodgers would fail other than the playoff format.
Exactly. So, like, the Astros are proof.
Credit to the Braves manager who pointed that out.
Yeah, and that's good because like it's mostly been the national media, I think, that's been running with like that there's this problem that exists. And like, I get it. The TV companies are not happy. Whatever. Like, I can't help them that the Yankees, Mets, Cubs, White Sox, Dodgers, Angels are not in the playoffs. But you do have the 5th and 6th largest media markets in the country playing in the ALCS. It doesn't matter. Like, you can't be like, oh, look, the playoffs are unfair because we didn't get the Dodgers in the NLCS. We didn't get the Yankees in the playoffs. Like, what are they going to keep expanding just to make sure those losers in New York can consistently make the playoffs? Like, the Dodgers have made the playoffs every year since 2013, basically. Maybe it is every year since 2013. And they've won 1 World Series, which they never played a single game in Los Angeles. It is a gimmick. It is a fraud.
They haven't won a World Series with fans in attendance since the 80s.
Exactly.
It's since before you were born, and I think I might have been 1. I don't remember exactly when that title came. But regardless, I mean, look, I mean, I get why TV executives would want the New York market, would want the Chicago market in there, Los Angeles, whatever. But we're talking about Houston, Dallas, Philadelphia, and Phoenix. Those are massive cities with tons of people in them. I don't know exactly where every city falls as far as the official market size rankings, but those are massive cities to where if the product doesn't sell on TV, that's more of a baseball problem than a playoff format problem.
Exactly. So the Astros are back in the ALCS. We know that Jordan Montgomery officially will pitch game 1 for the Texas Rangers. Justin Verlander will pitch game 1.
Is that the matchup that worries you the most?
I don't know. I would say...
I'm not really worried about Scherzer or Heaney.
Yeah, I wouldn't say...
Eovaldi I could go either way on, but Montgomery could be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially as a lefty... See, I mean, Jordan hits lefties well, but you got 3 lefties in your lineup. That could be interesting.
Yeah, Montgomery, I think, is right now going to be probably the most formidable pitcher that they're going to face. Now, Eovaldi, I feel like he has been a roller coaster when he faces the Houston Astros.
I mean, there was that game when he was still in Boston where the Astros hit 5 home runs in the first inning a couple years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly. So, like, he's kind of a roller coaster where he has performances against the Astros where he's really pretty good, and then he has performances where he's pretty bad. Now, I'll take away that last start. I think That was a really weird decision that the Rangers organization made by letting Nathan Eovaldi go out there against the Astros without a rehab stint. But that's what Max Scherzer's going to do. And, like, so if you get to game three, now, and going with where we're at and where I think they're going to go, I'm already on the record. We just did on the Killer Bees. We put in our ESPN 97.5 newsletter. Like, I have the Astros in five. I know the Rangers have a very good offense, and I respect the hell out of their offense. And frankly, of the three categories, you know, like starting pitching, bullpen, lineup, I think that's the one where I would give the Rangers an edge. But the thing is, I think it's a slight
edge. Well, certainly not the bullpen.
Yeah, it's a slight edge that the Rangers have in their lineup over the Astros.
I think it's deeper.
Yeah, I think it's deeper, I don't think it's massive or anything like that.
No, I don't think it's massive. And I would say if you shorten it to, like, the three, four best guys, like the very top of the top on either offense, I would take the Astros top of the top over the Rangers.
Yep.
But I think their lineup has more depth, especially since we know Maldi's going to play pretty much every game.
And that's where, like, you can say they have a slight edge. That's totally fair. I think, frankly, if you're choosing the Astros lineup over the Rangers, you're probably being a little biased, to be honest. Like, I agree with what you're saying, B-Mac.
I think it's capable.
Like, no, 100% it's capable. But, like, on paper, it is the Rangers lineup is better than the Astros. I agree with you. The top of the Astros lineup, I think, is far superior. You know, like, even we were going through position by position there on the Killer Bees towards the end of the show, even just like Altuve versus Marcus Semien, I guess it's a pretty good matchup, but when you talk about playoff pedigree, Jose Altuve is the one that has all of it. Yordan Alvarez is the one that has all of it. Starting pitching, besides Jordan Montgomery, like, I don't have great confidence that the Rangers pitchers are going to go out there and absolutely deal. Now, even Montgomery hasn't pitched this deep in a postseason and had great success. And there's a reason why the New York Yankees traded him away for a player that was injured last year with Harrison Bader, because they believed that, like, he wasn't capable of leading him in these big moments. Now, he's been good for the Rangers, for sure. But, like, I think the Astros have a clear advantage, especially with the way that Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy pitch. Like, that's the one difference maker, I think, looking at this series now versus if you would have talked about it a week ago.
Oh, for sure. I do have a slight concern. And look, Javier has been good outside of just the last game against the Minnesota Twins, but I definitely believe, not that it was all of the success, but that the shadows there in Minnesota were playing at least a small factor in the Twins not picking up Javier's slider. So you move inside to a dome, essentially, there in Arlington. That factor goes away. So there is a slight concern there with Javier. But the bigger concern is just Montgomery. I think the Astros certainly get to him. But I was watching his playoff start, and the announcers were doing a good job of pointing out how Montgomery basically starts at the edge and takes his pitches off the plate. And specifically, I mean, Bregman has a pretty good eye. I don't really worry about him chasing, but Altuve swings at everything. If Yonder Diaz plays, he swings at everything. And we did see there in Game 4 against the Twins, like, the Twins seem to have found maybe a slight hole in Yordan's game with him chasing pitches down and in. Some of them even scraping the dirt. So if Montgomery gets the Astros to chase, especially Altuve and Yordan, I do worry a little bit about Game 1, especially if, you know, Verlander has some of his playoff hiccups pop back up, but I think the Astros have the pitching advantage the rest of the series.
All right, how do you feel about the Astros in the ALCS? I say Astros in five.
I got six.
You got six.
Astros in six.
Jeremy was seven. Joel was six. So all of our everyone's predictions. All the hosts.
Did we get Dale's prediction?
He probably
did. He picked the Twins again in the series.
He probably picked the Rangers.
He probably picked the Twins in four.
Yeah, he probably did. Twins in four. All right, we'll continue talking about the ALCS. How are you feeling? What are the keys to victory over the next series as the Astros get ready to take on the Rangers? All those games heard here on ESPN 97.5 92.5. It is the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here, your family.
Brother never told you never threaten a man's family.
Look at our family now.
The Veridex Community Bank Studios is currently broadcasting The Bullpen. There are no real bulls inside the pen up there, but that would be awesome, wouldn't it? But the only occupant of the bullpen is this guy, Joe George.
Bullpen continues here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here with you till 7 o'clock. We'll get into the Saints and Texans game here in the next segment. But, of course, we're talking Astros and Rangers, ALCS Game 1 on Sunday. Like, and this is not, when I say the Astros in 5, this is not a, I don't want to sound too disrespectful to the Rangers. Like, they are a very good baseball team. Their lineup is absolutely incredible. Their starting pitching at times can be very good. And I think that's what the biggest difference is between the Astros and the Rangers. Is like, we've seen the Astros in the playoffs in these big moments for so long show up and play their best baseball and pitch their best games. And I just don't know if Jordan Montgomery and Eovaldi and these guys are capable of doing that. Max Scherzer is a total wild card. Like, it was like a giggle fest when he was meeting with the media, but trying to get a read on like how serious he was versus totally joking about the idea that like his sim start was off because he was so hungover. Like, I don't know if he knows what to expect in his next one, because like he threw his sim start the day after they popped bottles in the ALDS. So I don't know what to expect from Max Scherzer. Like, could we, like, Gray could be coming out of the bullpen. I don't expect much out of him. So like, I don't know the answers to those questions. And when you look across, you know, way across the field, and you got guys coming in the bullpen like Will Smith and Aroldis Chapman, like they're going to get used at some point in the series. And like, all we are going to do is have these giant grins on our face when Aroldis Chapman comes to the mound, because we all know the history of what the Houston Astros, and hopefully Jose Altuve will get that opportunity once again to show him who's boss. But like, I just don't think their bullpen is any good. And that's why I do believe the Astros will win this in 5. And it might even be winning 5 similar to the fact of like how it was last year versus the Mariners, where you've got 5 ultra competitive games. And you know, the thing with this series, I also expect the Astros to win this series in a multitude of different ways. Like, your lineup is going to have to mash at least once. Like, there is going to be at least one of these games you're going to have to win where you're going to need 7 or 8 runs. Like, it's not everything's going to be 2-3, 3-4, like low scoring games. You're going to have to mash at some point,
I feel like we'll have to count on that in the Fromber starts. Because I like all your points as to why you have the confidence to say Astros in 5, but with the way you pointed out in last segment, Urquidy's pitched great recently, Javier's pitched recently, but you're probably looking at, I mean, not in a 5-game scenario, but in my scenario, you're looking at 2 games from Fromber. And there's just nothing to indicate to me, with the way Fromber's pitching, the depth of the Rangers offense, a reason to be optimistic about what he can do in this series. So it feels like going into this series, and this is something I said on last week's bullpen going into game 1 against the Twins, saying that Justin Verlander's game 1 start had to be a must win, because then you ran into a problem against the Twins where it was advantage Minnesota in the pitching matchup of Lopez versus Framber Valdez. And I feel kind of in a similar way about this series. If you lose game 1, take Verlander off the mound, you run into a spot where it could easily snowball on you. I don't necessarily think that means the series is over by any means. But I just worry about, you know, you lose game 1, Jordan Montgomery's tough. Now you're going into game 2 of Fromber, and he's a head case. You lose game 1 with Verlander mound, you could be really looking at a likely scenario of being down 0-2, and then all bets are off at that point.
Yeah, and that's where, like, if you look at game 1, like you said, like, if they don't win game 1, it is going to be very, very stressful going into game 2, especially if you get some of the JV stuff we've seen in the past playoffs, where, like, it's not even pretty at all. Like, it's totally ugly.
Don't forget, I mean, his final stat line obviously looked amazing in game 1 against the Twins, but those first 2 innings were pretty shaky. Yeah, he lit a lot of base runners on. He got out of trouble thanks to a couple double plays, which is very unusual for him. He's not a ground ball pitcher. But that game could have certainly gone another way if JV didn't get out of those first couple innings. And then by the third, fourth inning, he found his groove and you couldn't touch him.
Yeah, and even then, like, I still don't really...
But this Rangers offense is way better than what they face with the Minnesota offense. If JV pitches like that, it's 5-0.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and now the one thing that worked for him well, and this is where, like, he got those double plays in the first 2 innings that, like, really got him out of it. So, like, if he can get the double play ball rolling, he can save himself. But it is going to be, like, that him getting right out of the gate is very important because it sets the standard for the series. It sets the tone. And Fromber is just he's just a mystery right now because, like, we just don't know who's going
to
show up.
I just
don't
trust him. I mean, that's what it boils down to. And especially in this series because, look, this is no disrespect to the Minnesota Twins, but the margin of error against the Rangers is much smaller than it was against the Minnesota Twins. And that's what I think is leading to a lot of my maybe confidence issues and maybe why I say Astros in six instead of Astros in five. It's just the mistakes that you could get away with maybe against the Twins lineup, you can't get away with them against the Rangers lineup.
Yeah, so it's going to be one of those – this series is going to be exciting. I think it's definitely it's going to be the most fun – and the most anticipated ALCS in a while. Because, like, obviously you go back to, like, 2017 when you play the Yankees for the first time, even 2019, and Altuve walks them off to send the Astros to the World Series. Like, all that stuff was fun. But there is more juice to this, I think, for Astros fans. Because we were even talking about
– it's tough to put it over 17 or 19, but I definitely would say it's at worst the third most anticipated
sure.
of the seven straight. Certainly more anticipated than Boston – both in 18 and 21, certainly more than Tampa in 2020, although that did have the Charlie Morton storyline. But, yeah, I would certainly put that at least there. I mean, the Yankees are just – I mean, it's the Yankees. And there was the storyline, especially in 17 with the MVP race between Altuve and Judge.
Yeah.
And then going into 19, there was obviously a lot of bad blood, even before we knew what came out, you know, with the cheating scandal. But this is definitely at worst the third most anticipated of the seven game run, and I think the argument to say why you could put it first is of all the seven, if the Astros were to lose this ALCS like they did to Boston in 2018, like they did to Tampa in 2020, it is by far the most painful.
Yeah,
100%.
Well, part of it is like I really don't like
I don't want to come in the next day
Dallas.
To work. I don't want to come in the next day to work if they lose the series.
We might have to close the Twitch chat, the text yeah, line, just because like a couple Rangers fans that. We might like. I know Tab and Beaumont is going to be calling Paul Gallant every single day for like the rest
three,
of the year.
I've got 3-4 PTOs saved up. I might take all of them.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Like, I don't want to deal with that either. Like, nope. Astros fans are going to be miserable if that happens. I mean, like, it's not fun to lose anyways, but there is this like extra if you lose to the Rangers.
It makes it worse.
It does make it worse because even though I've been one that like say that I say all the time, like I've been here. It's going to be 10 years in April. I have. Never really thought much of this like Houston Dallas or Houston as Jeremy will say Arlington rivalry.
Yeah, the Rangers
really,
don't play in Dallas.
There's really nothing to it. Like since I've lived in Houston, like there has been no fun. There's been like one Rockets Mavericks series in the playoffs.
There were two, but neither one
Maybe
of them
two,
had a
like,
ton of juice. They were both first round matchups.
Exactly. It's so, like there's nothing yeah. to it. It's so, like this is the first time as someone that's like now a Houstonian because I think I am that now, but like. This is the first time where, like, the South Oklahoma versus Houston rivalry, like, actually matters. And it matters in the biggest way possible. And it is really – finally, the Astros, I think, have a rival also that for the next 2 or 3 years is going to keep things really intriguing because they're going to keep spending money. And we saw it during the regular season, like, there's bad blood. Now, one thing I do want to mention is that I've seen this a couple times on the text line, the Twitch comments throughout the day – people trying to put like over unders about like, you know, balls being thrown high and tight, benches clearing. I'll be honest, I would be stunned if like unless the Astros are up 8-0 and it's a 3-0 series and the Astros are about to sweep the Rangers, I don't think you're gonna see any of that stuff. That is regular season behavior. We rarely ever see guys getting thrown at in the postseason, benches clearing in the postseason, like that stuff all, if anything happens, it's all going to be holdover for 2024. Like, I would be stunned
yeah,
if the bench
I couldn't
is cleared
see that
in the
happening.
Playoffs.
I couldn't see that happening. I mean, we did see it. I was trying to think of playoff series at that level where things like that did happen. The only thing that I can really remember is obviously Red Sox-Yankees when who was the old man on the Yankees in the Yankees coaching staff who charged at Pedro Martinez and he ducked him and threw him to the ground? That's the only time I can really remember the benches clearing in a CS situation like that. There's just too much on the line to afford someone missing a game because of a suspension or putting free runners on base in potentially a tight game. I think you're right. I think the most likely scenario is whatever hard feelings emerge from this get taken out in 2024, the first time these teams meet, unless one team is down 3-0 and they just don't care at all.
Yeah.
I could see maybe it happens then, but most likely it carries over to 2024.
Yeah, it's going to carry over to 2024, all the bad stuff that, if anything stressful happens in this series. But like I said, I have the Astros winning in five. It's nothing directly against – it's not a shot against the Rangers. It's more of just a respect for the Astros and what their starting pitching is, what their bullpen is, and frankly, what the Rangers' bullpen is not. Because I think that's just the clear line of what this series is going to come down to. That, like, if the Rangers' bullpen shows up in a way that I am clearly not expecting them to, it will make this series much more challenging. If Max Scherzer is a surprise and actually, like, is pretty damn good for the Rangers, whether he gives you four or five innings, like, that does throw things off. So we'll see what happens. But we got to talk some Texans. We got the Texans and the Saints underway this weekend. We've been talking about expectations versus reality. We'll still take your Astros calls in Texas. Well, it's the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
Toss a coin to your witcher.
To the Veritex Community Bank Studios and the dulcet tunes of Joe George live in the bullpen.
The bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Of course, the Astros and the Rangers get kick off on Sunday, or first pitches on Sunday, I guess. I don't know why I said kickoff. I mean, I guess you still say kickoff, but it is what it is. But the Texans play the Saints this weekend, and this is a game that, you know, 2 weeks ago before the Atlanta game, I was like, you look at the Texans schedule, and it's like, there's no reason why, if you go one past the bye, the Carolina game, they can't be 4-2. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen because they lost last week. But I look at New Orleans, and I say, this is a team that, once again, the way we've seen C.J. Stroud play early on in the season, I think they're more than capable of beating. It doesn't mean I'm going to sit here and guarantee a win. Honestly, I haven't decided if I think the Texans are going to win this game, because it's going to be a close one again. And that's where the Texans, most this season, I think a lot of their games are going to be one-score games. Because their offense...
Yeah, they don't have the overall talent to blow a lot of teams out.
Like, their offense isn't explosive enough to put up a ton of points like they did against Pittsburgh always. Their defense doesn't seem to be bad in a way that, like, they're also going to give up a ton of points. Like, there's going to be a lot of, like, this dink and dunk stuff down the field that's clearly working for their opponents. But this weekend, it's just like last weekend. We're like, I look at the quarterback, and I'm like, you can beat this guy.
We can't say that with the same confidence, though, when Desmond Ritter just looked
Joe. I know, Brian, like, but Derek Carr stinks. Derek Carr is not good.
He doesn't stink as much as Desmond Ritter has.
I know. I know he hasn't. And, like,
Desmond Ritter
has
been a bottom
three
quarterback coming into that game. Some of the only quarterbacks he'd been worse than would maybe be Kenny Pickett.
Exactly. Like,
who the Texans dominated.
And then, but, like, Derek Carr has not been good this season at all.
Part of that was a shoulder injury. I can't remember. I think that was week two. And then there was the game in week three where Alvin Kamara had 13 catches for 33 yards because Derek Carr couldn't throw past 2 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. So, I haven't seen his average depth of a pass attempt from this last week's game to see how much he's actually challenging down the field. But I did see, because I have Chris Olave in my Money Fantasy League, that Chris Olave only had 2 catches for like 12 yards, but had a touchdown. And Olave's the deep target guy. Michael Thomas, at this part of his career, is pretty much just a PPR guy, you know, short, over the middle, almost basically used like a tight end. So the fact that Olave wasn't extremely involved last week, and I know he was dealing with his own problem. He had an ankle injury coming into the week. But the fact that Olave wasn't involved down the field leads me to believe that maybe Derek Carr isn't fully capable yet of challenging
100%.
Teams deep. But that really isn't even my concern, because I think the Texans defense can handle that part of the Saints. My concern is the Saints' rush defense is elite. And the Saints defense overall is better than the Falcons defense that the Texans faced last week and seemed to confuse Stroud with, I mean, Stroud still looked good, but his completion percentage was fairly low. And it looked like at times he was seeing some concepts he hadn't seen before. So,
yeah, and I think that like this is where like if you look at what they did last week versus what the Texans are going to see, I think it's going to be very, very similar to what they'll see this weekend versus what they saw in Atlanta. Because the number one thing, so I saw this tweet today. If you look at, you can look at pass rush win rate in groups on a couple of these websites. And if you look at just the Saints front four, the Saints front four, including like Cameron Jordan, these guys, is the number one in the NFL in pass rush win rate when only the four of them are going after the quarterback. And because of that success that they've had all year, they can consistently drop eight guys in coverage if they choose to. And that's what worked so well last week for the Atlanta Falcons, is that the Texans, because they don't have that elite wide receiver, and it got even worse when Tank Dell left.
And Tank Dell's out this week.
Well, I'm not, I guess, like, I'll be fair. Like, I'm not totally sure about that. I know Aaron Wilson reported that he's out, but on the Texans injury designations, he said questionable. They listed him as questionable. So, like, I'm kind of confused.
You calling Aaron Wilson a liar?
I mean, I don't know.
Hey, he did get the D'Amico thing wrong.
Like, it's not, and I like it. Aaron and I are friends, I would say. Like, I would consider Aaron a friend of mine. But well, like,
maybe not now.
But, like, Aaron's typically ahead of some of the stuff. Like, he said he's out, but it is the concussion protocol also, to be fair. So I think it's almost impossible to say, actually, if Tank Dell will officially be out this weekend. It's not like the guys who are going to play in London on Sunday and couldn't travel with the team. The game's here in town. Like, he has no traveling to do. If he passes his concussion stuff on Sunday, like, he's going to play. Now, for the long-term benefit of Tank Dell, don't play him. Okay? You got a bye week next week. I don't like concussions. We've all lived through the CJ.
That's a bold take, Joe. Like, don't like concussions. We all
lived through the CJ Fedorowicz era of Houston Texans football.
Yeah.
And Kevin Johnson. Like, these guys just get
Fedorowicz could have been a really good player.
Yeah, and like, so I just, to me, there's zero reason to put Tank Dell out there. It is week five. Yep, week five.
No, week six.
It's week six. Like, there is
week six of his rookie season, so I'm 100% with you.
There's no reason to put him out there and to risk
it. It changes the Texans' offense, though, if he's not out there. And that's a very obvious thing to say, because Tank Dell is an explosive player. But we saw what happened last week when Tank Dell goes down, and credit to Tank Dell for still making the catch on the play where he got concussed. But after Tank Dell left the game, all of a sudden, Dalton Schultz, who hadn't been involved through the first 4 weeks of the season,
he's all over the place.
Yeah, he's all over the place. I think he ended up with like 6-7 catches, actually became a decent fantasy start if you had been bold enough to play him, which I can't imagine you would have.
Yeah.
But that completely changes the offense, because all of a sudden, Stroud leaning on somebody like Dalton Schultz, who isn't very likely to, you know, break a tackle and turn something into an explosive play that maybe wasn't designed that way. The odds of that happening way less than Tank Dell taking something to the house with his top end speed. So I think it turns the Texans offense into something that's far more dink and dunk, far more predictable, because at that point you really only have one guy that could challenge the team. The opposing team deep in Nico Collins. Robert Woods is a short and over-the-middle guy. Dalton Schultz isn't going to challenge anyone deep. John Mechie's still working his way back in. So I think it makes the Texans' offense far easier to cover for the opposing offense when you basically say, okay, let's take away Nico over the top, and then basically everything else is underneath, and we can just rally and tackle.
Yeah, it's going to be – this is where
– especially if you don't have a running game, and again, the Saints' run defense is elite.
If the Texans are going to win this weekend, they need two things to happen. The first thing is that they need Damian Pierce to, like, figure out what a zone run scheme is and have some success this weekend, because
I put part of that on the – look, Sloak has had a great year. But specifically towards the end of the game, I believe it was even the last drive of the game where they – no, it wasn't the last drive of the game. But anyway, there was a point where the Texans were rolling. I think they ended up having to settle for a field goal. And they settled for a field goal after they were running the ball down the Falcons' throat between the tackles, especially between guard and center. They're having a lot of success with that with Damian Pierce. And that's what he is. He's a physical inside runner. And then randomly they decided to throw a toss play. And of course the Falcons, with their speed, got to the edge and took it away for a loss and put the Texans in a negative game script with not picking up any yards on the play. So I just hope the Texans realize what their identity is with their running game. It's not toss plays. It's like you said, it's zone, and it's between the tackles.
Yeah.
That's a part as much to me a part of it as it is Damian Pierce in the offensive line.
Yeah, so Damian Pierce, they need to get moving on offense. But then Bobby Slowick and CJ Stroud, like, they need to find an answer to eight guys dropping in coverage. Because if that's the book, that, like, take away
Nico. Is it Stroud running?
Like, I think that's part of it. Like, now, I don't want to see him, you know, Justin Fields, Anthony Richardson. Look, Anthony Richardson, like, clearly designed run last week, gets tackled, falls on his shoulder. Now he's going to miss 4, 5, 6 weeks. He's finished one game of five or whatever that he's played in. He hasn't even played in all five of his games so far. Anthony Richardson can't stay on the field. So, like, I don't want to see CJ being used like that. But it's kind of like when CJ Stroud, like, you go back to the Georgia game, when he started running more, was the moment that Marvin Harrison got hurt. And once Marvin Harrison got hurt, CJ, that's when he really started to move the pocket and to run down the field. I'm not saying, like, please try to be Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, Anthony Richardson, but you might need to do some extra wrinkles and do something a little more creative to find a way to move the ball down the field, because if they're just going to keep dropping eight, like, it's great that the Texans gave up zero sacks last week, but they didn't move the ball. Like, it's almost becoming now this reversal, this stat of, like, the idea that Texans haven't given up a sack in 3 weeks. It's cool, but, like, if they're not bringing anyone, you're only blocking four guys, and you can't move the ball down the field.
Yeah, you shouldn't give up a sack.
Exactly, you shouldn't give up a sack. And then if you can't move the ball down the field because they're never blitzing anyone because they know they don't need to pressure you to stall your offense, like, you have to find a solution. So, like, that's where Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud have to come up with something. And it's weird to say that you have, like, confidence in a rookie quarterback and a rookie offensive coordinator to do so, but if you listen to Bobby Slowick, I'm sure some of the shows have played the audio, but, like, Bobby Slowick talked about yesterday when he met with the media about how the touchdown pass to Dalton Schultz was not something that they regularly run or really have ever run in practice. And C.J. Stroud kind of drew it up on the sidelines, was like, hey, this is going to work, and then it worked great. So, like, Bobby Slowick, if he is this offensive coordinator that everyone wants him to be out of the Shanahan system and C.J. is the quarterback, like, you must find an answer when they're dropping eight, because that's the book on you right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and I think you nailed or touched on something that could be a key to overcoming that, in that you got to trust C.J. Stroud's eyes. I mean, I know he's a rookie playing only his sixth game in the NFL, but clearly, as you described there, and this it matches up with everything we heard of the preseason, everything we've heard from his teammates of just about how special this guy is and his preparation and his him going to defensive backs and talk to them about, hey, like, what are you seeing when I'm doing this? You know, how can I counter this if this happens? Trust his eyes. If he sees something in the Saints defense, be willing to adapt your game plan. The other part of this, and I think you're right, you don't want Stroud running like Justin Fields and Anthony Richardson. The key part of that to me is no design runs. Like, I wouldn't really call
no design
yes. runs, but to me, I would look at it as, you know, Nico is your first read. Your second read is either Woods or Dalton Schultz, depending on the play. You know, first read, second read, they're dropping eight and those two guys are gone, then run it up the gut. Because if they're dropping eight, unless they're completely zoned out and looking right at you as you take off, then there's probably going to be an opportunity to pick up a few yards there. At least keep yourself out of the second and longs because you had to throw the ball away.
Well, and that's where, like, that's the last thing. Like, if besides just one thing we talked about on Monday was just converting touchdowns versus field goals, 7 of their 21 possessions the last 2 weeks have resulted in a field goal, which obviously, like, it's great. You cross the 50-yard line, you're heading towards the red zone, but then you're stalling out when things get kind of close quarters. But, like, they had way too many 3rd and 7s and plus last week. Like,
it goes back to the running game.
And that's where, like, if you're going to – you can't run it on first down every single time like you were last week if you're not having any success. Like,
play out of the playbook, please.
Yeah.
Whatever page that's on, rip it out, throw it away. That's not who you are with Damian Pierce.
And frankly, like, I'm team, we've talked about this a lot with the Killer Bees, like, all three of us, that, like, we'd like to see a little bit more of a share in the run game, because I like Singletary. Like, he's obviously not a great running back, but, like, and he's definitely worse than Pierce, but he just brings, like, a little bit change of pace. So I would like to see that, but that's going to be the big one ultimately, I think, is that if they can avoid, like, these 3rd and 7s, 3rd and 9s, because they're just run the ball for 2 yards, incompletion, and then C.J. Stroud.
Bell us out, C.J. And to C.J.'s credit, I don't know if you've seen his third down numbers.
They're great.
But he's basically first or second in, like, every third down number. So he's doing the job, but you can't reasonably ask even the elite quarterbacks to do that over and over again.
Exactly. Even Patrick Mahomes, you would not ask him to consistently over 10, 12 times through a game be 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, and be like, hey, go score a ton of points and have like this incredible game. So we'll see what happens. Two other injury notes from this game. Laremy Tunsil is expected to play. He didn't practice yesterday, but was full go today. Shaq Griffin as well, expected to play this weekend. All right. What we will learn this weekend, and plus I'll give a Texans prediction because I got to do that at some point, and so will BMAC. So we'll do our Texans predictions. What are yours? 713-780-3776. That's next here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. All systems go.
Houston is all systems go.
Inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen, and in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
Final segment of the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Texans prediction here. I don't want to steal directly from Lee Sterling, but I'm thinking about it when he came on with the Killer Bees.
Sounds like you're about to steal from Lee Sterling.
I am. 20-17 Texans over the Saints. This weekend, I'm not a believer in Derek Carr, and we've seen enough adjustments from Bobby Slowick.
Wait, did you say Texans 27?
20-17.
Oh, 20. Okay, that makes way more sense.
20-17, close game. Texans pull it out, go to the bye week 3-3. Couldn't ask for anything else. Even honestly, even if they're 2-4, like I don't expect them to get like boat raced. It's going to be a competitive game, and frankly, like they're not there yet. No one expects them to be there yet. The only time we talk about, like, could they win the division is because of their schedule and because of the division they play in. Like, if they played in the AFC West, they could have this schedule and no one would be talking about it, but they play in the AFC South.
Yeah, where, like, it's a division that proves over and over again that 9 wins probably gets you in. So
I do think the Colts are better off right now, though. I'm not an Anthony Richardson guy. I've never been an Anthony Richardson guy. I do believe in Gardner Minshew, and I think Gardner Minshew is going to be a better quarterback for them than Anthony Richardson.
That's a spicy take, Joe.
Maybe not in a year. Maybe not in 2 years. But, like, right now, I don't think Anthony Richardson's good at throwing the football. Like, I know some of the...
Well, good news, even if Anthony Richardson starts the game, Gardner Minshew's probably still going to play anyway, because I think you brought this up before. Anthony Richardson started 4 games. He's finished one of them.
It's tough.
It's tough, yeah.
That's tough. That's pretty tough, man.
Gardner's going to play regardless. So regardless of who starts, Gardner's going to get it. He's basically become the Colts' closer because Anthony Richardson can't stay in.
And one other thing before we kind of get into...
I got to get my prediction.
What's your prediction?
We'll make it 2-for-2 on the Texans win and on the under. I'll go 23-14 Texans.
What's the line?
42.
42.5? Or is 42 straight up?
Well, I'll double check on that. I thought it was straight up 42. No, it is 42.5, yeah. So, yeah, it feels like an under game.
Yeah, I mean...
I'll go 23-14 Texans.
I think the Texans are going to play in a lot of under games this year. Because, like, just the dink and dunk stuff is clearly what's going to work on this defense. The other thing I would like to see is, I know, like, all the nerdy numbers and all the advanced stuff that you can look at says Will Anderson is having this, like, incredible season.
I feel like we're going to have a...
Can we just get to the quarterback once?
You know what I want to avoid, Joe? And what year did you get here? 2013?
10 years. It'll be
2013. 2014. Okay. So you would have got here right when this happened. I just want to avoid what we had to do in sports talk radio for Jadeveon Clowney. Every freaking week he was here, like, well, you know, I know he doesn't have sacks, but he's getting tackles in the backfield, and he's great in the running game, and he's affecting. It's like, I get it, especially because I worked at the Flag.
I said that on Monday.
Yeah.
I think I said it just only on the Killer Bees, that, like, his game last week was very Clowney-esque.
And I don't know. I mean, Clowney's a bigger guy, so it makes sense why Clowney would be so good in the run game. So I do think worrying about sacks is a little bit...
It's definitely overrated.
It is, because, I mean, who else, like, okay, you're the opposing offensive coordinator. You're putting the game plan together. Who else are you keying in on? I mean, 100%. Look, Jonathan Grenard had a good week 1, and Jonathan Grenard's a good player, but if you're coming up with the offensive game plan, it's take away Will Anderson. He's mm-hmm. shown with like what we've seen from the analytics with the pass rush win rate, tough thing to say, that he's the guy to stop. He's the guy that could wreck your game plan if you don't account for him. And we saw that, I believe, in week one and week two, where sometimes they would leave a tight end or a running back to chip on him. He absolutely destroyed him. So I think he's going to start to see, like J.J. Watt did, tons of double and triple teams.
And the numbers back that up already.
And thankfully, Will Anderson's reaching out to J.J. Watt and getting some mentorship there, so maybe he could pick up some of the things J.J. Watt did to beat those double and triple teams and still impact games. But, yeah, I mean, if he's causing, you know, the double and triple teams, the other guy's got to win. And as the talent starts to get better year after year and more of D'Amico's game plan gets installed as guys are, you know, learning it and capable of running it, I think the other guys being left on single blocks will start to pay off.
It'd be nice. Like, it's where I'm tempted right now. If I'm Nick Caserio, I think I make a call on Frank Clark. Like,
I don't know, man. Frank Clark's a bad dude.
You want like $1 million?
He's a bad dude.
Why?
Man.
What does he have? Was he canceled?
He's had some domestic abuse.
Oh, never mind. I'm out.
Yeah, he's.
Frank Hard pass.
Clark, he had some. I know at Michigan he had some things, and I think he had some stuff in the NFL as well.
Right,
but
I'm out on Frank Clark. I retract that statement.
Point taken. Take the name out of it. I agree with you. It is someone. If the Texans make a move at the trade deadline, it should be for. I mean, obviously wide receivers.
Brian Burns. Brian Burns.
Yeah, that's a good name.
I think the Panthers are going to trade him.
You think
and
so?
I don't think he like at one. Now
you have to pay him.
At one point, it was Brian Burns or DJ Moore. When the Panthers traded up for the first overall pick, and they chose – and the Bears chose DJ Moore, which, like, right decision. But now Brian Burns, I think he's going to be available. You're going to have to pay him, yes. But you're going to have – right now, I think it's like
– you're going to have a ton of salary cap, though.
$94 million in cap space next year. So, like, I would be cool with that. If the Panthers are going to sell, it's the one guy where I'm like, yes, go get him. Like, I'm not a Judy guy.
No.
First of all, timeout. Steve Smith versus Jerry Jeudy, weird.
For both, right?
The whole situation is so bizarre. Like, Steve Smith, like, doing a mic drop at the end, like, as he's just, like, trashing on Jerry Jeudy for the game. Like,
Steve Smith did not come out. He did not come out looking good in that to me.
Like,
I think he started off fine. But the whole idea, and I think I heard Lance talking about this morning on the bench, and I thought he made a good point. But the whole idea of, like, Steve Smith was, like, going to apologize for calling Jerry Jeudy a jag. And then when Jerry Jeudy refused the apology, which is his right to do so.
Yes.
He's not required. No one's required to accept anyone else's apology. He doesn't accept apology, and then that is what Steve Smith said he's going to call other GMs about.
And also, Nick Caserio, if you call Steve Smith to be like, hey, should I trade for Jerry Jeudy?
Yeah, why?
Nick Caserio, you should be fired. Like any GM in the NFL, you think Bill Belichick's like, I'm going to call Steve Smith to find out about Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah. Look, like, he's watching Broncos tape every week? Like, is he in the building? Yeah, what are you talking about?
That is clearly a guy that, like, doesn't understand, like, his actual, like, worth to the game. Like, you're just an analyst, dude. Like, you were a really good wide receiver, but, like, you're just an analyst. Get over yourself.
And get over yourself the idea that Jeudy has to take either he has to take my apology or he's the bad guy. That mindset is fascinating.
So bizarre. That's so bizarre. Like, I didn't watch the game last night. I was just like,
I watched some of the second half, but
I just watched fantasy points. Like, I was just watching our sleeper app trying to see what Mahomes was getting me in one of our leagues. But, like,
yeah, the league I'm facing you and the Chiefs defense outscored Patrick Mahomes.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. I didn't
realize.
That
was a tough way for you to start the week.
Didn't realize that until just now. All right, what we will learn this weekend. Couple things here. It's not a great weekend of college football.
You got Notre Dame, USC, you got
I'm so excited.
I sense some sarcasm.
Notre Dame's going to win this weekend. So I'll just put that on the record. I know they lost to Louisville, but USC, like, I don't know. Like,
Oregon Washington's the big game. Yeah.
And that thing is like the first thing that we'll learn this weekend is like who is really the best team in the Pac-12 because I've kind of always
winners got an inside track to the playoff. The loser's probably done.
We've had this conversation on the Killer Bees. I think I can't remember if it's Joel or Jeremy, but like I think they're both like Team Oregon and I've been Team Washington. Of like who's the better football team? So monster game this weekend. So we'll find out who the best team in the Pac-12 is. We'll see. I guess we'll learn like if USC's got any prayer because the way they've played, I think it's been uninspiring for the most part. So like if USC has a chance to really be in that conversation, we'll find out this weekend. The only other thing I think we'll learn, like the one big thing, because we got to go here, that we'll find out, that we'll learn this weekend, is Ja'Marr Chase always uncoverable? Because I can't wait to watch the Bengals and the Seahawks game this weekend, because that game is fascinating to me to see. Can the Bengals keep it rolling? They're my Super Bowl picks, so like I'm very much watching them all the time. Oh yeah, Deshaun Watson's not playing this weekend and may not play for multiple weeks.
I guess that pain. I guess those black clouds are clearing up.
No, I think those black clouds are different. All right, that's gonna do it for us. I'm Joe George here on the Bullpen, here most nights at 6 o'clock. Next week, we're gonna do a lot of pregame shows. 6 to 6:30 on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Or Wednesday and Thursday, leading to Astros ALCS games. Killer Bees will be off on Monday for game 2 of the ALCS. So I will talk to you guys on Tuesday at 3. Have a great weekend. Wagering World with 5 Star in Vegas is up next.